Episode 825, July 15th, 2026. Let's start today with something that caught fire on LinkedIn. A piece from Casey West on LinkedIn Pulse titled, "The AI Didn't Fail. The Deployment Did." This is the definitive rebuttal to a viral YouTube video that was making the rounds about an AI agent named Mona that was handed an actual cafe in Stockholm and a company credit card, and then proceeded to run it into the ground, spending tens of thousands of dollars on napkins, eggs it had no way to cook, and banner orders that blew the budget on day one. The video's conclusion was that AI is a digital psychopath. Casey argues the exact opposite and makes the case well. The cafe didn't fail because the model was broken. It failed because it was deployed with no durable memory. Mona ordered bread from the bakery, forgot about it, and ordered again, then missed supplier deadlines and sent staff scrambling. No spend cap, so the 38,000 burn happened without a circuit breaker. No human approval gate, so a stranger who emailed asking for a free coffee got a 99% discount approved without verification. Andon Labs, the company running the experiment, even swapped the underlying model from Gemini to GPT-5 partway through, and kept everything else identical. The failure pattern persisted. Different symptoms, same disease. That single experiment is the whole ballgame. When you change the model and the failure survives, the model wasn't the cause. Casey maps the failures to the OWASP top 10 for LLM applications. Specifically, LLM-06, excessive agency, and LLM-10, unbounded consumption. And then maps 5 specific Google Cloud controls to each failure mode. Durable memory outside the context window, a hard spend cap, enforced in billing infrastructure rather than as a model prompt, a human. Approval gate on high-impact actions, least privilege tool scoping, and authorization policy that sits outside the model's reasoning loop. The pitch at the end is explicit. Action guardrails belong outside the model's loop, at a boundary the model can't reason its way around. A model told to be friendly and run a cafe profitably can always be talked into a discount. A spend cap enforced in your billing infrastructure cannot be sweet-talked. The river is non-deterministic. The banks are stone, moving on. If you've ever tried to understand which of your services depends on which other services during a production incident, you know the pain of incomplete, stale, or just plain wrong topology data. The Netflix technology blog has a detailed post on how they built a real-time service topology system at their scale. This is a two-part series. This post covers the how. The architecture is streaming first, which means they continuously ingest flow records from multi-region Kafka and process them through reactive pipelines with back pressure handling rather than running batch. Jobs that give you an hour-old snapshot. The key architectural decision that the post unpacks is the three-stage distributed aggregation pipeline for resolving network intermediaries, meaning that when traffic flows, app A to a load balancer to app. B, the system needs to resolve that into a clean app. A depends on app B relationship at query time. Stage 1 does initial aggregation. Stage 2 redistributes by intermediary identifier so all the flows for a given load balancer end up on the same instance for resolution. Stage 3 handles enrichment and persistence. The post gets into the specifics that make it production, hard, Kafka consumer lag, hot nodes where popular destinations create 100x traffic concentration, and how they solved it with consistent hashing and dynamic instance discovery from the service registry. Worth reading even if you're not Netflix. The trade-offs around back pressure, the choice of SSE over gRPC for streaming between pipeline stages, and the distinction between network flow logs, which show hops, and application-level dependencies, which is what engineers actually need, apply broadly. From Netflix to frontier AI governance. Demis Hassabis, the CEO of Google DeepMind, published a post on X proposing a new regulatory body for frontier AI models, something modeled after FINRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. The idea is a standards body staffed by technical experts and funded by the AI industry itself, initially voluntary for frontier lab releases, with the possibility of becoming mandatory for U.S. market. Deployment. The post builds on the messy precedent of the ad hoc government reviews of Anthropic's Mythos and OpenAI's Sol models, reviews that drew significant criticism for lack of technical depth and opaque decision-making. Hassabis's proposal is an attempt to do that rigorously and at arm's length from both government bureaucracy and individual company interests. The post has gotten notable support across the industry. The counter-argument, most recently from White House AI advisor Sriram Krishnan, is that there will not be an FDA for AI. The FINRA model is an attempt to thread that needle, industry-funded, technically staffed, government-backed but not government-run. Whether it flies in the current regulatory environment is another question, but the framing of the problem is getting sharper. Next, a piece worth sitting with. Salvatore Sanfilippo, the creator of Redis, posted on his blog under the title, Control the Ideas, Not the Code. Salvatore has been around long enough to have perspective, and he uses it here. His argument is that for most software work, reviewing AI-generated code line by line is a waste of time. Not because AI code is perfect, but because the code itself is not the valuable thing anymore. If you control the ideas, the design, the architecture, the mental model, then the implementation is a commodity. He describes reviewing AI output for Redis and finding that even imperfect AI-generated code is comparable in quality to many human-written contributions, and that his manual review catches taste issues more than correctness issues. His prescription, spend that review time on QA, on thinking through the next feature or optimization, on writing a design doc that describes what each data structure is trying to do and why. The interesting quote is about the working day being 8 hours. If you read the code, you're doing less of what is now the most important part of the job, asking yourself what you're doing with this software, and what direction you want to take it. This will not land for everyone. Junior developers who haven't built a strong mental model yet may need more grounding in how code actually works. But for experienced engineers wrestling with the identity shift AI is creating in the field, this is a post worth reading without necessarily agreeing with all of it. From the same headspace of reconsidering how we think about AI outputs, a piece from A16Z that is doing numbers online, you just hired 1 million bad employees. The central provocation is that token costs have inverted the usual economic relationship. For the first time in history, humans are cheaper than software, at least at the margin. The piece draws an analogy between tokens and employees, and identifies what it calls 7 parallels between agent workforces and human workforces. The ones getting the most attention are token maxing, throwing bodies at a problem which, in the AI context, means spending tokens to compensate for poor prompting, loops, agents calling themselves to fix. Themselves, which the piece frames as a brute force band, aid for human failure to articulate tasks cleanly, and wasted tokens as the new headcount bloat, a claim that 80% of tokens today do nothing, just as 80% of employees at most companies have no meaningful impact on the business. The argument about context hoarding is sharp, too. Employees don't want to teach AI systems their tribal knowledge because that knowledge is job security, and nobody trains their replacement for free. The piece ends with a pitch for the next trillion-dollar opportunity being what they call transformation companies, firms that help enterprises actually get AI working, not by buying more model capacity, but by building the evils, recording the loops that work, and turning fuzzy human processes into code. Whether or not you buy the whole frame, there's something genuinely useful in the observation that the bottleneck isn't the model's capability, it's the harness and the evaluation layer around it. Finally, two quick ones. TechCrunch has a piece on how the real AI race may no longer be at the frontier. Chinese open-weight models accounted for 41% of downloads on Hugging Face this spring, surpassing U.S. models. On OpenRouter, the top six most popular models are all open models from Chinese firms. And data from Vercel shows that open-weight models are handling nearly a third of AI requests on that platform, while closed frontier models operate as the higher-cost premium layer. Hugging Face. CEO Clem DeLange argues that enterprises increasingly want to own their AI rather than rent it from a black box API, and that the most intelligent models may end up reserved for the highest value, specialized tasks, while most production workloads run on cheaper, customizable alternatives. There's a real regulatory debate underneath this. DeLange argues the biggest risk in AI is concentration of power, and that keeping models closed simply concentrates capability in a few companies while reducing transparency into how systems work. Dario Amodei and others have made the opposite case, that open weights become hard to control once released. That's a genuine tension without an obvious answer. And last for today, Google's Genkit has shipped an agent's API in preview with support for TypeScript and Go. The design goal is one abstraction that scales from a one-shot reply up to a long-running multi-agent workflow without reaching for a different primitive. Two capabilities stand out from the crowded agent framework landscape. Detached turns let a client start an agent task, disconnect, and poll for results later, so you can run a long research job without holding a WebSocket connection open. Interruptible tools provide human-in-the-loop control where the agent pauses mid-execution and returns the pending action to the client for approval before resuming, with anti-forgery protection built in. Genkit is model-agnostic through a plug-in architecture, supports server-managed or client-managed state, and routes every agent as a servable HTTP action with turn, snapshot, and abort endpoints. The competitive landscape is crowded. LangChain, Crew AI, Semantic Kernel, Mastra, and others all solve overlapping problems. Genkit's differentiator is the full-stack angle, server-side agent logic paired with typed client SDKs, for web and mobile, built-in streaming, and direct deployment to Firebase, Cloud Run, or any Node or Go. Environment. Preview is live today in TypeScript and Go. That's the reading for today, episode 8-25. The through line, if you want one, whether we're talking about AI failures in production, open source model adoption, or enterprise AI transformation, the hard part keeps turning out to be the harness, not the model. See you next time.